Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Well, today I am joined by Tom Leonard. He's an internet marketing consultant, and we are going to discuss how Netflix actually attracted the first 50,000 subscribers, because Tom was there, which is very cool. And we've met over in California. Nice to see you, Tom.
Hey there. Good to see you too.
Yeah. We had a really good time. We had a fantastic Thai restaurant near where you are. Absolutely brilliant. You gave me a tour around the neighborhood as well. So we had a great, it was great fun, right? It was great fun.
No, it's always fun to have tourists come visit, have visitors come and visit, because it gives us the opportunity to come, go around and see the touristy things we wouldn't look at otherwise.
Yeah. It was very
Hollywood
cool.
And Highland.
It was very cool. And the Chinese theater, right?
Yep.
Very cool. And you showed me your old house. That was very cool. Nice neighborhood. Really nice.
Well, so, that's one of the great things about living in Hollywood. There's so much, to me, interesting history there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could really, just every little street has some little movie connection, it seems like. Which, if you like movies, if you like the entertainment business, it's just a really, really good place to be.
Yeah. Well, it was certainly fantastic. It gives me a whole new dimension, especially, you know, going to that bar on, what is it? I think it was on Hollywood Boulevard. I went with my sister to the bar where, I forget what it's called, where they shot part of that film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Do you know the bar I'm talking about?
I don't.
I'll look it up in a minute and I'll tell you what it was. But it's Frank's Grill.
Oh, Frank and Musso's?
Frank and Musso's, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's many things are filmed there. Yes. Yeah. That's a really popular place.
It was
place.
Epic, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And the barman was actually in the movie. Yeah, that just made me grin. And he had such an attitude problem. It was hilarious. Like, he was just Mr. Attitude completely, yeah. It was almost like something out of like an old gangster movie. Like, going in there, it feels like that. It's like a really, really strange place. But yeah, so I know you used to work at Netflix in the early days. You used to work at Warner Brothers, and you know, you went to Stanford, and you know, you're a pretty intelligent guy, right? So we've never really delved. What's that, Tom?
Keep going.
That's where I stop. I'm going to stop at Stanford. Okay. That's enough. So, despite Blockbuster owning this database, right? Because you just told me before, of 284 million people, how did Netflix grow from nothing to those 50,000 subscribers?
Well, one of the things, as we were talking about, this was in the 90s. This is before big data really existed in a meaningful way. And Blockbuster, because every time you went in there and you had a membership card, so they tied everything back to your membership at Blockbuster. So they had a record of everything that you had ever rented. How valuable is that? If you want to market then to people a particular movie that's coming out, you have their street address, you have their payment. The database was just unbelievably valuable. And we were always scared that they would figure out how to use that against us, which for all kinds of reasons, they did not. And so we were lucky that way. But one of the things that I remember starting out at Netflix was the people who ran it, Mark Randolph, who hired me, one of the founders, Reed Hastings, who's still there, obviously, running the company. They were two things. They were fearless and they were analytical. It's like, yeah, we had no fear of Walmart. We had no fear of Blockbuster. We had no fear of anyone else, which is always good. You kind of need that in a startup environment anyway. But also unbelievably analytical. I will bet that almost the third person hired at Netflix was the stats guy. It's like they wanted to measure everything. everything, which for being an internet marketer was perfect. It's like, you know, I just had all the information I ever wanted. And when I wanted to do know other things, then I could say, hey, how about can we measure this sort of thing? And they're like, oh yeah, let's do that. And so it was so much fun that way. But I think a large part of their success is just the fact that they like to test things, measure them, and then improve on what it is that they're doing. And that's how they fell into the subscription model. So because they just were like, let's try this out. And they did. And it's like, hey, maybe this thing has legs. One of the things that happened with Netflix, and again, it goes to their long-range thinking there as well. I remember being there, and this has been a long time back, they were talking about doing streaming someday. We were all doing DVDs in the mail. And they were talking about doing doing streaming even back then. So, but one of the things that they did, this was back in the days when not everyone had a DVD player. It's hard to believe DVD players were a thing. But so we could only grow as a company as quickly as people had DVD players. So what did they do? They went to all the DVD manufacturers in Asia in particular and said, hey, can you put this free offer card insert into every box you send out? The manufacturers were like, you bet. I mean, anything, yeah. Because anyone that buys one of these doesn't have a million DVDs at home, doesn't have any DVDs at home. So here's a value add from their perspective. So, and for Netflix, it was like, hey, you know, this was, you get it home and you open up the box with all the other stuff. Here's a little card that says, oh, now I can start ordering, getting DVDs in the mail. That would be really fun sort of thing. So,
yeah, much better than the Blockbuster offering of the late fees. And, you know, you go to the shop and they've run out of it. I mean, people listening to this, some may not have experienced that, right? But like, I remember being like 10 years old in England, going to the local video shop, the Blockbuster or whatever, turning up there. And you've heard all about this amazing film, yeah? And like, your mum's late all the time, yeah. So she drives you there after school, she's late picking you up, and you arrive there, and what happens? Someone else has rented like the 5 copies of your films, yeah. I mean, you want those films, so you end up taking away some film you've never seen before, which is just lame, yeah. But you do it anyway, and then you forget to take it back on time, and you get charged a massive late fee, right?
Yeah, quite a business model, huh? But it really worked because it gave people a new option for entertainment. So what happened with these cards then that were out there when people would send these things in, we start collecting their email addresses. Mm-hmm. So we needed to get the first 50,000 subscribers in 3 months after I got there to meet funding guidelines for the company starting out, as I remember it. And so I had this database of, I don't know how many names, but Mark Randolph, he was like, he said, my nickname there was the Badger, because it was just like, just send as many emails, you know, do the email thing, send as many as you want. They'll either figure out how to subscribe or subscribe to the service or unsubscribe from the emails. He said, don't be shy. Just from a testing aspect, it was so much fun because we should always go out there and do all this testing to figure out what would work. And so it was really from that database that I was able to mine it for those first 50,000 subscribers. If they hadn't done the cards in the boxes early on, I wouldn't have had a list to go to. We would have been out advertising. We would have been, you know, in a million different places. But
much more difficult.
That was really the source of it. Also, it's interesting when you're talking about with Blockbuster, and when you're talking about what triggered, you're talking about the 5 videos at the video store.
Yeah,
that was also another real something to solve. How many discs do you buy when a new title comes out? Well, we try to get people to pre-order, you know, put it in their queue, you know, so we can get a feel for it. Well, how many people are you willing to disappoint? Because you're not going to buy one for everyone, because then you're going to have this massive inventory, this, you know, back when you had discs. So how do you do that? And early on, There also, the other thing that Blockbuster had that we did not have starting out was Blockbuster basically had a royalty deal where they only paid the studios a royalty. They didn't pay, they didn't buy a piece of, well, they probably paid for the piece of plastic, the 99 cents, whatever the plastic cost, but they didn't pay the full, you know, price for full wholesale price on these things. We did.
Right.
So there, right. There were these, there was a warehouse up in San Jose, and it, you know, probably one of the worst jobs that these kids will ever have on their resume was they had to open DVD boxes for Netflix. So they were like, boxes and boxes, and they were literally opening the little DVD covers, taking them out, putting them in the sleeve. So, because at the time, the studios did not think that renting DVDs in the mail was a real business.
Right.
You know, it was just starting out. So the studios were skeptical, and studios in general, especially after having worked at some later on, extremely conservative. They do not go after new technology or new way of doing things unless they're typically kicking and screaming drug to the party sort of thing. So, you know, so they saw, you know, the Netflix model was interesting to them, but they didn't see it going anywhere. They were still, you know, Blockbuster was their guy. Hollywood Video was their guy. And they're the ones. So Blockbuster, Hollywood, anyone that had that revenue share, that had that revenue share deal, that royalty deal, we didn't. So we were buying, and a huge amount of Netflix capital at the time, of course, I don't really know what the old numbers were, but a big chunk was going to buying the DVDs.
Yeah.
Well, when we started, then we got big enough that the guys that were doing the negotiation with the studios were able to get a revenue share deal. And the first one, as I remember, was Disney. They did a deal with Disney. Mm. Once they did that, all the others fell into place.
Of course. Because
that's all they needed was to have one of the big guys say, oh, let's do it that way. So once we did that, then we had a revenue share deal. So we just had to pay for a piece of plastic and then a revenue share back to the studio, which was a negotiated rate, but was worlds better. So in that case, then it started to eliminate the problem. How many do you buy for a new release? Because all we have to do now is just buy the pieces of plastic. Same thing when we were mailing these things out. One of my jobs, you know, the little red envelope.
Yeah. I remember getting them because I was a subscriber, I think, or my dad was maybe, you know.
Well, that red envelope early on, that was my department's responsibility to get those printed. And what we were trying to do is when we were sending those things out in the US mail, we were the second largest postal customer in the entire United States. Wow. And everything went out of the San Jose post office. And you go over there and it was just like, it was bright red every day. It was just like, there were so many of these envelopes going out. So what we were trying to do though, because we were paying first class and a half because of the weight to send those things out. So that was like 55 cents, I think. So if we could get that down to just first class, figure out a way to get this packaging down so it weighed less. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would have been able to save hundreds of thousands of dollars a day on that. So we were trying all kinds of different things. We were doing little Tyvek things. And what happened was, because when we were sending these things out, at the time, everything was going out from the San Jose post office. And so they made sure that the little discs did not go through the machines. So everything went out. When it came back from all over the country, it would usually go through a machine and machines would break the disc. But from a marketing standpoint, we weren't so concerned about it. As long as the disc broke on the way back instead of on the way there, then, you know, then the customer didn't necessarily, it wasn't inconvenienced for it, sort of thing. But so, yeah, so we got the first 50,000 subscribers, obviously, and it started growing from there, but it was just and always has been just a data-driven machine. Whenever you look at anything that that changes on Netflix, if you go out there and you see, oh, what's this little new button here? What's this little feature here? What's this? You know that thing has been tested to death. Sometimes we would have, it sounds really hokey, there would be hundreds of pricing tests in the field at the same time. Wow. So they would go out there, they would test, you know, this price for this, this free offer for 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days, 8 days, 2 weeks, 1 month, 2 months, you know, what kind of free offer, you know, all kinds of different things. And people are always like, wait, how can you do that? What if someone sees, you know, two different offers out there? You're like, big deal. If they see a better offer, give them the better offer. It's like there wasn't much risk there. And just the benefit of doing the testing and doing the testing in a sophisticated way. It wasn't like we didn't just test things because, oh, this is fun and we can learn something maybe. It's like only test. One of the things I learned there was only test the things that you can do something with the knowledge that you gain. So it's like, okay, let's go out there and test these subject lines.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, put some thought into it. It's like, what are you saying in these subject lines in these emails? So you can learn something so you can use it down the road, not just this versus this.
Yeah. I agree. So, it's the most important, one of the most important things, isn't it? Subject lines. I've been studying courses on those in the last month and I'm getting better. But the only way to get better is practice, right? Really?
Oh.
Practice and testing, yeah?
No, because that's a great, working over here at Warner Brothers, it was always like, everything was like, you know, the people want to do it this way and do it that way. And it's like, let's test it. It's, you know, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer to it. You know, although, you know, you could argue with it and whoever had the best title usually won. But, and we were happy for them to win usually. So, but no, you just test. I remember years and years ago, and this is, I'm old. So I worked at Netscape. When Netscape was the biggest browser out there. Mm-hmm. And I had it, I was, when I got to Netscape, they had a database of 6-7 million names. When you downloaded the next Netscape browser, they requested an email address. So they had 6-7 million names. They're like, and they didn't know what to do with them.
Wow. Because
no one had a list of 7 million email addresses back in the late 90s. It did not exist. So they were like, so they're like, hey, let's do something with these. So they created a direct marketing position that I got, fortunately. Mm-hmm. Smartest group of people I have ever worked with, including Netflix. I mean, they were really smart. But just back then, just the little testing that I was able to do, because we were using, we ended up using a software. There was no software could send out 8 million emails. It just did not exist.
Right.
People would come to us because Netscape had what they called, and I have no idea from a technical standpoint, but we seemed to have this pipeline that was mm-hmm. super big, super large at the time. So people would come and they'd do anything they want that they could for us, you know, from a marketing standpoint. We'll do everything for free as long as we have access to the pipeline.
Right.
We're like, oh, okay. That sounded good to us. So we went out, we went with this little company called Anuncio that turned into PeopleSoft, turned into Oracle, I think, to do our emails. But just the whole fact that I could do that, I created these little tests and then rolled it out to the larger audience. I was responsible probably for about 2 million browser downloads on one update. I mean, wow. It was just from the testing. We could have sent out an email, or we could test and send out an even better email. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, the testing is really important. But to me, that's part of the fun. It's just like, hey, you know, figuring things out. And then once you figure out what works, then you know, it's classic direct marketing. Then you try to beat whatever you're doing.
Yeah. So it's basically, you know, a continual development and continual testing and refinement, right? Like much what we do now with our work and with everything that we're doing, we're trying to get better, aren't we? Every day, yeah. But also, like when you're at Netflix, I know you said to me before that they built a lot of their own stuff. So they built a lot of their own technologies, right? When they were doing things, they would just, you know, use someone's technology and then say, well, actually, we're going to build this ourselves because we want it to do this, 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 and this, right? Do you think that's still kind of a good idea or what?
If you're able to do it and they were capable of doing it. So for example, the email program that I had there was called, we called it the hammer instead of the spammer. And basically it was, you know, it was just an internal system that worked really, really well. And it was based on just going out and looking at what was everyone else doing in the email space and how can we do that internally.
Right.
And other things. I'd never worked on it, but you know, same thing with the rating system and all kinds of things. I mean, most of those were internally generated. The other thing that was interesting, most of the engineers that started at Netflix, and again, this is years and years ago, then a lot of the engineers came with Reed Hastings from his company, Peer Software. Mm-hmm. And when they came over to Netflix, they came with a software mentality. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It seemed to be a different approach. It's like, if you're doing software, you're putting it on a disk and you're selling it to someone, that thing's got to work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be right. And you don't get any, at the time, you know, there weren't internet updates. I mean, there was no way to fix things. So it had to be perfect going out the door. Well, if with the internet stuff, particularly emails, it's like, an email has a life of, if it lives for 36 hours, that's a really long life. I mean, it's just lasts for a short period of time. So I would send my emails to QA there at Netflix, and it would take like 2 days to get these things QA'd. It's an HTML email. But they just want to make sure that it worked in all kinds of situations.
Right.
And it's like, it doesn't have to. But it was interesting, approach to business, the way that where they came from versus where I came from. Finally, they made a deal with Mark Randolph there, the guy who hired me. He was like, as long as this email will not bring the site down, then you can approve it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So it's like, there's no way an email could do that sort of thing. Although I did get Warner Brothers, I was able to bring down the Warner Brothers site though, because we were selling discs and I got my deal on the front page of Slick Deals. And just because we had a really good deal and I just, you know, won the lottery there, and Slick Deals pointed all their traffic to wbshop.com. Boom, we were out of the water, which was
right.
Great.
Right. So. So with Netflix, when you first got there, right, the steps you took were you basically got this piece of mail to initially get the emails, and then you basically sent them an email. So you sent it to a manufacturer, right? The card, and it went in with the manufacturer's DVD. Program, right? DVD player, yeah.
Right,
and then in the box. And so you basically designed a really good promotional leaflet, or whatever you want to call it, card or whatever, right? And you tested that before you sent it out with multiple people, or did you just send it because it looked great and you thought, well, actually this is what people want?
The emails?
No, the card initially to get the emails. How did you do that?
It was there wasn't much testing done there, because that's the other when you think of the whole concept. Back in the olden days, when we did direct mail in the mail, I remember doing stuff with American Express because they had the most money to play with. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but it comes in the mail. You know, you respond, you don't respond, you put it back in the mail. Think about weeks to get your information. Think of the internet. It's like, you know, instantaneous. I mean, you know, it's so quick on your response.
Yeah.
But the cards that were going in the boxes, there just really wasn't time to test. I mean, the whole time frame of, we had to have these things months, you know,
you had 3 months, didn't you, to build the subscribers, to raise the money so that they could get the VC funding and grow the business, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I understand completely. Obviously now you would test that and you would say, does this one work better than this one? And you know, you send it to different locations and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, obviously. Right. You might spray it with a bit of antibacterial. Yeah. Make sure the postman washes his hands. Yeah. So what was the next step after that? right? You've got all these people who are responding to this offer, okay? So what happened like immediately after they've responded? You sent them the piece of card. It's in the box. It's arrived. They've bought the DVD player. Did they just go crazy for the offer or what? How did it work?
The response rate was pretty good. I don't remember what the exact, and it was a little tougher to measure because you never knew for sure how many of these cards went out and how many were actually in the hands of consumers and so on.
Of course.
But we did have a pretty good response rate. And basically the offer was a free trial. Mm-hmm. So you got like a 2-week free trial or a month free trial of it. Yeah. We started out using a month thinking that was a really good thing. And then we realized later on that we were giving away the farm. It's like in the month, so many people on the subscription model in the first month, they go through so many movies. Oh, look at this. So they're just going through the movies, just chewing through them. Yeah. And there was a threshold that we knew that's like, they go over this so many discs a month, they're going to cost us money. So just from the royalty fees and everything going out there. So, but we were fine tuning that, but typically the card was for a promotional offer of a free period out there. And so they would go and they'd sign up for that free period. And then I would get their email address. Now, if they were already, if they signed up for the trial period, then it's like, well, then we had to convert them into real paying subscribers out there. So that's when we started the email program, going out there and talking to these people. And what was great is basically when when working on the hammer, I said, I want eight slots every night. So, and I want to be able to put different things in those slots over a period of time. I can look at the results because I didn't want the day of the week to make a difference in the results and to see what the response would be. And once they created those eight slots, it was just great. Then I could just do anything I wanted. And I was able to test. I tested things like the number of days after we got your email address. So I did like a day one, day three, day five. I did a day one, day eight, day, 16, did all kinds of combinations to see which ones would work. Mm-hmm. I had different offers, different creatives that went out there, within reason. But what happens because I could put them in those eight slots every night and then keep track of the results over time, it got to the point where I could tell what the best sequence was, which, I think it was like day one, day three, day five. Not only could I tell which ones we have the physically had more signups for, I could also predict which ones produced the most profitable customers. So it's like, because we knew how much profit or loss every single customer was bringing to Netflix. I mean, that just the way that the program was set up there. So, but because the whole idea was, and then of course, what I always thought was a lot of fun was the other end of it. It's like, when people cancel, what do you do? So when do they come back? And again, remember, this is with the DVD program. It's probably the same with streaming, but it's like, okay, with the DVD program, it's like, so the sweet spot was 8 months. So after you were no longer a customer for 8 months, you had the highest likelihood of signing up again. And then we'd have all kinds of benefits. Maybe we'll save your queue for you. Sort of thing, maybe we won't. We tested all kinds of different combinations there, but it was just getting to play around with the numbers and measuring things.
They're still very good though, aren't they, at getting rid of customers that they don't have, the unprofitable ones. Like, they're very good at that, and hanging on to the really good ones, that you see a different, completely different user interface. If you go and try and cancel and you're a profitable customer for Netflix, finding the button to actually cancel is very difficult. This is what I've understood. I find that very, very clever, really. So I've got another question here. Is it possible, do you think, that someone else could duplicate this to like surpass Netflix, or do you think that they are just doing it so well?
One of the things that you notice now, particularly in the streaming world, is that the whole entertainment world is based on content. It's like people are pretty agnostic, I think, on the source, the platform. It's the content. Now, obviously, you know, they go to Disney Plus, but it's because of the content. It's not because it's Disney. It's because it's the content that they're going to find there is what attracts them. So one of the things that you've seen, you know, Netflix has done tremendous with that, you know, with their own content. So as they're trying to move away from the studios and their content, then it's a different model. And they seem to be, you know, obviously relatively successful there. They just pump out a tremendous amount of content, original content, and that's got to just cost unbelievable amounts of money. So, you know, that's going to be, it's going to be more of a content situation. You know, the whole subscription model is, you know, something that anyone can do, but some people do it better. So, you know, can anyone duplicate Netflix? It's like, yeah, it would be super tough to do it. And we kind of started this discussion talking about Blockbuster and their 284 million database out there. When you think of the information that Netflix has on everyone, from a preferences standpoint, mm-hmm. It's like, that's one of the things. It was interesting because one of the things that I went to the stats guys at there and I said, tell me for my email program, tell me anything that identifies someone that's going to stay with us longer. I was trying to figure out, how do we keep people in there longer? Tell me, you know, anything that is an attribute of someone that will stick around with us longer and is something I can influence. It's like if they live in the state of New York, it's like, I can't do it yet. But, and they came back and they said two things. They said, if anyone has ever rated a movie, they're going to stick with us longer. They're like, okay, I can get people to rate. I can identify people who had never rated a movie to get them to rate. Because instead, before I was sending them newsletters about all these great movies that had just come out, I started sending them newsletters about all these that had only the movies that had the highest number of ratings. So it's more likely that they're going to like, oh, I like that movie, you know, so I'm going to click there. So let's see. So there was the rated, and if you had more than 10 movies in your queue, so if you had more than 10 movies in your queue, you're going to stick with us. So I just went back to the database guys and I said, send me a list every night of people that fall into one of those categories. They've never rated or they have had fewer than 10 in their queue. And I'm going to talk to them to get them to do that. Boom. It was just like amazing how, because the database was getting large enough that, you know, if I could just increase it by a matter of days, you know, the average subscriber is like, wow, this is all gravy. But it was just fun to be able to use the numbers to do that sort of thing. So, so back to your question though, can anyone else do that? It's, boy, that database would just be so hard to replicate. And not only, you know, that database, but you have people who really know how to use data at Netflix. So it's like, you know, to be able to, cause that's when you have, you know, you have HBO, you have, you know, even Amazon and what they can do, they've got to be pretty good.
Don't forget Amazon. Amazon own IMDb,
Oh, that was another tricky thing that we did because we were paying for all the blurbs, all the content on the site. We were paying, and we're like, why are we paying for this? It's like, just build a scraper. Go out there and scrape this information off the internet. Because we were paying, it was probably IMDb, a lot of money for the blurb, for all the information out there. Mm-hmm. And no, we just went out and scraped free information and used that. And it was a whole lot cheaper and did the same job. No, I really like watching Amazon Prime and getting a tap on the screen and see information about who it is that's in there. I just think that's fascinating. But you're right. What an amazing database of information there.
Yeah, it's huge. It's exciting if you think about it. Going just from books to all of these different things. And And actually, they're pretty good in the way that they don't hassle you. If you've got your setup, if you've got it set up correctly, I don't get bothered by Amazon. I use Amazon Prime, but the video compared to Netflix, it's just a bit meh. That's what my sister would say.
Oh, the content on Prime?
Yeah, it's not as good as Netflix. The user interface isn't as good. The way they keep trying to upsell you on paying extra is annoying. Yeah. You're paying a subscription already, right? Why are you trying to charge me extra? I get it that I use Amazon Prime, which is a delivery thing, okay, mainly. But I don't get the fact that you're trying to charge me and upsell me all the time. And it gets really annoying. So I switched. I buy Netflix now because it's better. It's just better.
Do you know how much you pay for Netflix?
Oh, I think £7 a month or something. Seven, you know, I only use it on one device. So my daughter has it on another account with her mother or whatever. But the content is amazing. It's so addictive. I mean, I've been studying Spanish. I've been watching this crazy thing on there. I couldn't turn it off until I watched the whole thing. It was a binge watch. It was insane about this Spanish gangster series. Yeah. Amazing.
I never thought of that as being a language learning.
Oh yeah, it helps because you've got the translations in the subtitles, right?
Yeah.
But Tom, that's been absolutely brilliant. Do you think there's anything else that you want to add to your next steps or?
Just another comment on Netflix is one of the things I find really fascinating about Netflix is that for the most part, it's the same people running it that were running it years and years ago when I was there and people started out. I mean, like Reed Hastings, obviously the CEO, has been there from the beginning, yeah. Sort of things. And Ted Serranos, who's the head of content. It's funny because at the time I lived in LA. I never lived up in the Bay Area. They were up in Los Gatos at the time. And the whole show was. And so I was just commuting back and forth, staying in an apartment up there during the week. And Ted was doing the same thing he was living in LA, doing the same thing, going up there. And it was just amazing because he came from, I think, Hollywood Video or something. And he was good at what he did. But to just think of where he is now versus where he was then, where the company is now. And yeah. It's got to be so much to his credit, because there's the technology side of it, and Neil, the Scottish guy, oh man, I can't remember his last name, who was always the head of IT from the very beginning, mm-hmm. and still is. I mean, Neil was so sharp at at doing things, and to take it from this little website of, you know, renting DVDs one at a time, with the vision of knowing that someday we're going to be streaming videos and creating our own content. So right. They have that same team in place. Mark Randolph, the guy who hired me, was the head of programming, moved on early on. But I was always fascinated that it was that same team, because a lot of startups don't do that or have trouble doing that. Because you have a startup that has 1,000 subscribers versus one that has hundreds of millions of worldwide subscribers, and you have the same guys doing it.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
That was pretty neat. So you got to really give them credit there. So no, it was fun while it lasted. They had was there for a couple of years. Got nicked with layoffs. They had money problems one winter, and they had layoffs, and so came back down here to LA and was doing this stuff, like you said, over at Warner Brothers, which was also tons of fun.
Yeah,
just from a content standpoint. So no, it's just fun. That's why we were also talking earlier about just being you coming and visiting Hollywood. It's like, if you really like Hollywood, you like the movies, you like entertainment, you know, people are like, oh, California is such a tough place to live because it's really expensive and all this, you know, and it is. There's a lot of reasons not to live here, but it's, man, when I was just, when I go out for my daily walks, I walk by Disney Studios. I can walk by Warner Brothers. I can walk by DreamWorks. I mean, it's just Nickelodeon is right over here. It's Cartoon Network. Everything is in this neighborhood. And so to me, that's fascinating. There's also a history there. So
It is fascinating. It's something that if people haven't been there, like when things open up again and all this blows over, such a great place to go to. I mean, I'm really pleased. I had a privilege to meet you finally in person, because I said I was going to see you for like probably 5 years, and eventually, eventually I made it. Right, I told you I'd make it eventually. Yeah, and it was great, man. It was great. It would have been nice to spend a bit more time, but I kind of got sick. Me and my sister were sick for like 2 weeks, because she lives in Hollywood as well. And yeah, it was one of the best trips of my life, going to California and Las Vegas and around there. But Tom, you've been absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And so if people want to get hold of you, how do they find you?
I am on LinkedIn. It's probably the best way to come across me. And of course, I have no idea what the URL is, but
don't worry, I'm going to drop it. I'm going to drop it in the show notes. That's
okay. No, super. that's probably the best place where I keep track of things going on. Obviously things are different right now than they were 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But I am not alone in that situation. So, in 6 months from now, we'll be thinking, man, remember how bad it was back then and how much better it is now. So.
Yeah. I agree completely. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. And thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.